I'm Clint Emerson, and welcome to Season 2 of Can You Survive This Podcast, where the interview is just as dangerous as the scenarios I put my guests through. From hostage situations to natural disasters, carjackings, active shooters, and more, if you're looking for the skills necessary to survive these situations, then this is the show for you. Hey everyone, thanks for listening to another episode. I do appreciate it. And last time I told you about my new book, The Rugged Life. It'll be on shelves May 10th. And we've added a little something special. If you want a free webinar, if you've already bought the book, you can go over to my link and you'll see free webinar. And there's a fill form. You fill it out, you put in all of your purchase information, and then you'll get a confirmation and a Zoom link, time, and date. Now, if you haven't bought it yet, go ahead, pre-order The Rugged Life. It's available everywhere books are sold. And then circle back around to my bio link and go fill out that fill form. We'll be talking about some cool stuff in that webinar. So there's a little plug for my new one, and I hope you guys dig it. Today, we have a pretty cool guest. I think you guys will have a lot of fun on this one. I know he will, whether he knows that or not. He is a action director, stuntman. He's a fight choreographer and stunt coordinator. He's also a Navy veteran and ex-paratrooper. I want to welcome Danielle Lochiaro to the show.
Nice rhyme. I like it.
Lochiaro. Lochiaro. Oh, yes. Yeah. I am awesome at butchering names. So, when we originally looked at it, I was like, oh, it's Lochiaro. And then you quickly corrected me. Lochiaro. Okay.
I have a hard time to pronounce my name, so I'll forgive you.
That's awesome. Before we get started, I have to ask if you can name this theme song. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm French, so I'll probably not. But
You better know this one. I'm really hoping you do. Okay, here we go.
Well, I'm not the kind to kiss and tell, but I've been seen with Farrah. I've never been with anything less than a man so fine. I've been on fire with Sally Field, gone past with a girl named Bo, but somehow they just don't end up as mine. It's a death-defying life. I lead. I take my chances.
Any guesses?
I can't hear well. Is it one of the, I don't know, Teen McGraw or something?
It was a popular TV show when I was a kid, called The Fall Guy, and it was a series.
Oh, wow. I know it in French. I used to watch it. Je suis l'homme qui tombe à pic. Je suis l'homme qui vient de loin.
Okay, yeah, that's the French version. There you go.
That was the French version. I just didn't know the English version.
Yeah, and every stuntman has to know that TV show theme song.
Of course, The Fall Guy. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think they are redoing a new one.
Are they?
Yeah,
that'll be badass. All right. Well, like always, we're going to jump straight into your rapid fire. I'm going to give you two choices. You pick your favorite. And then when we're done, we'll circle back around and discuss your choice. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You ready?
Never.
Yep. All right. Okay. A fighting scene or a driving scene?
A fighting scene.
All right. Fall down stairs or fall off a building?
Fall downstairs.
All right. Fire stunts or water stunts?
That's a tough one. Fire stunts.
Fire stunts. Okay. Who would you rather punch in the face? Tom Cruise or Ethan Hunt?
Ethan Hawke or Ethan Hunk?
Ethan Hunt.
Ethan Hunt. I don't know Ethan Hunt, so I'll say Tom Cruise.
It's a little bit of a trick question. All right. Would you rather be hit by a car or jump out of a moving car?
Hit by a car.
Hit by a car. Look at you. You're picking all the hard stuff. Okay. Or at least to me, it appears to be hard stuff. Okay. Break your penis or break your skull open?
mice fault. And
every man I know would say the same thing. All right. Lose a finger or lose a toe?
A toe.
A toe. Yeah. All right. Okay. Plan a fight scene or be in the fight scene. Yeah. You're an artist.
I say plan a fight scene.
Yeah. All right. Cool. And then, and this one's more just a general, like, do you believe in retiring or just keep on going?
Keep on going if you love what you do.
That's right. Okay. Going back to the top, I had fight scene versus driving scene. You pick fight scene. Why is that?
Yeah, well, most of the work we do, I mean, for me as a fight choreographer, I love to create action sequences, you know, with people as well. So fight scene is something for me that probably generate a lot of creativity. And then I would have fun on the driving scene for sure, but even more on the fighting scene because it involves more people, usually more than one person when they fight. And I love working with people.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the connection with people, you know, while working on scene in the car, just in the car, you know. And
Yeah. You're kind of on your own, right?
Well, it's kind of that connections that I love about it. But however, you know, both all sound great to me.
Okay. The next one was fall downstairs or fall off a building. You pick fall down the stairs. That one sounds like it would hurt more because at least when you're falling off a building, you just land on a big pillow, right?
Exactly, you know, or air mat, whatever it is, and depends how high it is of a building as well. But downstairs, I'm old school as far as stunts. I love greedy stuff. I love getting, you know, hard on the floor and making some beautiful images, action images by seeing the impact, by, you know, knowing that, oh, the guy just got slammed into that stairs and he fell backwards. And pretty much like the side roll on the stairs because those are easy. I like to get kicked in the back roll and it keeps on going. And
you see
the head slamming, and it might be sadistic part of me, but that's a great thing, you know. It's training. So if you know how to, you will train for your stunts. So, you know, you'll train how to fall down, so how to hit your pads, because usually you have pads on, back protector, shoulders, elbows, knees, hip pads, all of that. And sometimes shin guards as well, especially when it's concrete stairs, you know.
Yeah.
No, if you practice well, if you train, you just don't want to do it like this. Oh, let's do a stair fall and start to throw myself down there. Right? You can break something. But if you learn, if you have an awareness of your body, that's how you do it. You know, you train to get that awareness going, and then when you fall, you most likely not injure yourself. You know, especially if you have two or three takes during the movie, it's like, oh, that was great, fantastic, let's redo it again. I was like, why? Oh, because of a different angle.
Yeah, I did it great once. That's all I got. Yeah, and the reason I asked is because I looked at your sizzle reel. And your reel, it's a lot of, I've noticed a lot of stairs, right? And so I figured, you know, that must be something you've gotten good at.
You know, for a stuntman, the most required work is, you know, you being a bad guy, come up with a gun, getting shot, fall down or fall downstairs or fall, you know, like those are falling and slamming down. Knowing how to fall is probably the skill number one for a stuntman to have.
And got it.
What's the most? Yeah.
Huh. That's good to know. Mm-hmm. Okay. Next choice was fire stunts versus water stunts. You pick being lit on fire. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's all about the visual. It's always, you know, when you look at someone fire, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, he's burning and he's screaming and he's moving. You see, when someone is in the water, I mean, you don't feel that much pain for that person. And again, I have some stuff. And I worked on Dunkirk for 2 months doing water, you know, fire. There was everything in this
movie,
Christopher Nolan. And we were in Dunkirk. So I died probably 20 times in that movie. I had more life than a cat. I got shot. I got burned. I fell from the boat. I sank, you know, I exploded. You know, you can see me actually shooting on the plane, reloading, and all those It was fun, fun time. I loved it and a lot of water work. At 4 a.m., we were in the morning with the wetsuit supposedly helping us with the heat, except they open it up. They cut it here so we wouldn't see it under our uniform.
Oh, yeah.
The wetsuit. So it would defy the purpose because now it would be flopping and the water would come and goes in and out. And we were in the ocean. It was super cold. So everybody got sick at least once, all of the stuntmen. But amazing, amazing experience for sure.
Yeah. And while we're in the middle of this and you brought it up, Dunkirk, that I heard that movie was filmed like all in one shot, right? Or something like that. Was that?
That was 1918.
That one was filmed in one shot. Okay, because I think I've seen both, but I got confused which one was which. But yeah,
no, in Dunkirk, when you see the explosion, these are explosions. They are not like visual effects. They are actually practical effects. They are like, you see a series of bombs coming out, you know, and simulating the plane bombing the people on the beach, the soldiers. Those are real explosions, and we were around them. So you don't want to stand the knees when that bomb goes off for real.
It's a real deal. It's going to hurt someone, huh?
The real, yeah.
All right. Next one, Tom Cruise or Ethan Hunt? That was kind of a trick question because in Mission Impossible, Tom Cruise's character's name is Ethan Hunt, right?
I know that. I worked on Mission Impossible called Fallout.
Yeah,
it was in France again for 2 months. Tom Cruise, great to work with, believe it or not. But he's good. He's really, really professional. He does his own stunts. However, a stuntman will do his stunt first, the stunt that he's supposed to do, test the mechanism of the stunt, make sure that everything works well before actually Tom Cruise walk in and do his own stunt. So at the end, he does his own stunt, but that's been tested by stunt people.
Yeah. Now that's the one where he jumped from one building to the other and like broke his ankle or something,
that's
right?
That's right. Yeah. He was worried. And what happened, he was supposed to jump from a higher building to a lower one, and what happened? He says he got pulled too hard with a harness with a cable. So he, instead of taking the hit on the side, he was supposed to take the side of the building, on the stomach and arm, and push himself off and run off to it.
Oh yeah.
What happened? He felt like he went too fast to the wall, so he put his foot forward to stop that impact. Broke his foot, got the hit. Got up, and he actually, when you see him got up, he's actually limping. And what you see in the movie, they kept the take, is actually him really has his foot broken and still limping, so they kept the take.
Yeah, that's real. That's like pretty
that's real.
Real.
Real reaction. Yeah.
Yeah. Now the whole Scientology thing, did you know anything about that or?
Not at all. I'm not.
I'm like, it's still odd to me. Like, I don't understand. He's like still the, I think he's still the face of that whole, like.
Is it really? I thought he was kind of moving away from it, but.
I don't know. That's all I ever see is his face attached to that, that quote unquote religion. It's weird.
I know. And the thing is, to be honest with you, this is more personal to him. All I can say, he's a great person to work with as far as work involved.
Yeah.
As far as his belief and all that, I personally don't care.
Yeah, me neither. I saw some documentary on it, and I was like, holy crap, I had no idea. Like, there's some weird stuff woven into it. Okay, hit by a car or jump from a moving car. You picked getting hit by a car. Yeah, because that's...
I like both.
Yeah.
Been doing both. It's great, but obviously it's a little more adrenaline rush to get hit by a car.
I guess.
Yeah. You got when you see the car coming at you, you got a million things running through your mind. Yeah. And then at that second where you're gonna hit the car, somehow you get focused, like a laser beam, and you remember all of that because survival instinct kind of kicks in.
Yeah.
And, the fear is there until the car is about a meter from you, and then suddenly you kind of focus and you don't want to die. So it's just somehow the instinct, the survival instinct kicks in, and the training, obviously, because you have to train for that too.
What are the golden rules of getting hit by a car that you gotta always remind yourself of? Like, you know, you're jumping up just as it approaches, then you're always putting your back to the windshield. I mean, are there any rules to it? Or,
well, again, first is depend how you get hit by a car. Is it a side hit? Is it a where you back hit? Is it a front? You know, yeah. So according to that, let's say the car coming facing me, you know, the last one I did is like the car is coming and trying to shoot the guy, you know, in the passenger, obviously missed. He hit me with the car and I just go over the car, you know, again, yeah. Break the windshield and go, you know, it's like, usually cars run in the movies, they go around 17 miles an hour, which doesn't look fast, but it is fast when you get hit by it. But for me, the last one was actually 22 miles an hour or something like this, which is actually a little bit faster. So it's all about timing thing. You want to time it, right? So you want to have a run by where the car is running to that same speed next to you. And you kind of want to time it as it passes you, right? That those are rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
The car won't face you. It will gonna just run by. So you kind of time it where you kind of roll into it. So you land on the first hit should be whether on the hood or on a windshield. You probably want on the hood first. That will actually give you that going over the windshield, break the windshield, going over it. You know? Don't want to do is stay on the windshield and then keep going, right? Because if you fall out of the car or slide on the hood while the car is running, that's dangerous, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The best would be trying to get over on the top of the car, right? So it's a timing, it's a momentum, you know, you throw yourself and obviously, you know, you want to keep yourself aware to where your car hits you, because the hit sometimes it gets you throwing around and you don't know now what's up, what's down. And what you don't want to do is land on your head. And that's game over on the concrete, you know, on the pavement.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't want to do that. So it's about, you know, keeping yourself aware as a car hits you, where your body goes and how to land, you know, to make it look, again, no, you don't want to make it look pretty, right? It's not a gymnastic thing. It's a greedy impact and you want to just slam down, but at the same time, make it look, you know, epic, make it look painful, but also safe for yourself.
Yeah.
Like monopads, knowing how to roll, knowing how to land, you know, don't reach out your arms, like you can break your hands, you know, using your arm to roll that and to slam down, you know, it's a whole technique of making look like, you know, you hit the ground hard, but you actually ease into it, you know, at the same time. It's like a punch, you know, make it look like you get hit, but you're not, right? If your punch goes here, you know, there is a timing where you don't want to start to turn your head before the punch. All that, you know, I teach actors, you know, they contact me to do those trainings with me as far as how to punch, how to react, how to fall without hurting yourself, you know, how to do a choreography, how to use a knife, how to use a gun, all that so they can be believable on set. You know, it's another tool for them in their bag as an actor. And so they, you know, they, you know, fortunately learn a lot and enough to get hired. Sometimes it makes the difference for an actor, you know, whether to be taken or to be chosen for the role or not. Sometimes they don't know which one to take. So they're going to see the physical attributes. What do they have? How did they move? Oh, they're great. Now, this role is for a cop. Well, this guy's got a great stunt reel with Daniel Osisero, and we know, you know, look at this, and so we see the guy doing all of that, and sometimes makes a big difference. Like Sam Asghari, he's a Britney Spears fiance. He contacted me recently. He was on a Mario Lopez show, and he talked about our work together. As a matter of fact, and he came and contacted me because he had an audition for a movie called SWAT, I think, and it's with Mel Gibson.
Oh, okay.
It's a new movie is coming out next year or so. But he contacted me and he asked me, you know, if I could help him to do a reel because the director wanted to see him in action. So we did that reel with him, that fight scene, different series of him doing a choreography and fight. It was great. And he got the job. So it makes me happy, you know, that
oh yeah,
my work helped other people's work, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You're obviously a wealth. I can tell, man. You're a wealth of experience and knowledge, and that's cool. Anybody who, you know, embraces their craft, you know, I'm always all ears. I love listening to. I can tell how passionate you are too about it. It's cool.
Oh, I love it. I love it. You know, I mean, and you know, so to me, it's not just a personal thing as well. It's a teamwork when we do that kind of work. You know, as a stuntman, it's making sure so people are safe. You know, on set, you know, people, it's kind of a responsibility in some way to be a stuntman for that part as well, for the safety part, you know,
no doubt.
For yourself, for your body, because, you know, you want to not work the next day. So you're trying to save the body because my body is my work. Obviously, if I hurt myself, you know, I can't be on set. I can do choreography or fight coordinating, but I won't be able to be behind the camera. Or in front of the camera, excuse me. So all of that.
No, it's all good. That's good stuff. The next choice, speaking of protecting your body, break a penis or break your skull. Now, I think it's interesting that a stuntman was like, you know, I'm going to go with skull because up till now, you're all about the work. Until your penis gets involved, and you're like, no, I'll break my arm, break my leg, break my skull, but don't break my penis.
How do you break a penis anyway? What do you do with it?
yeah. Is there any part? There is no body part, right, for a guy that supersedes the penis as far as injuries, right?
I don't know. I mean, a skull. I've been there before, so I know how it feels. It doesn't scare me anymore. But penis does. Yes.
Yes, that's dangerous territory right there.
So I know. We're still young, right?
All right, lose a finger or lose a toe. You pick the toe. Yeah. Feel like you'd be off balance? Don't you think you'd be off balance as a stuntman if you were missing a toe?
I love fat food, so, you know, I'll stay balanced, you know, and the toes are small compared to the finger, you know, for
that.
As a matter of fact, you know, it's funny because I almost lost a finger, but when I was 3 years old, I have a big scar. I don't know if you can see it on the big scar in my hand.
Kind of see it. Yep.
And, you know, I wish it was a stunt or a badass story, but it's not. You know, it's just me falling onto a glass table and then having a little cut there. So they saw me back. But after a week, I was still 3 years old and my mother was giving me a bath and she saw the finger floating here. Why is it not working? So they took me back to the hospital and they realized that actually my finger tendon was cut off. So they opened the whole thing, brought the tendons together and saw it back. Otherwise I would have been, you know, fingerless, one fingerless. You would have had that kind of questions.
A limp finger. You would have had a limp finger. All right. Let's see here. Oh, plan a scene. So that'd be like choreography or be in the scene. And you pick plan a scene. Is that where kind of more where your passion leans to these days?
It was a tough question, to be honest with you. And I can go either way. It depends on my mood, really. Love to. So being in it, it's, you know, like if you're doing a stunt, so you follow the stunt coordinator's vision, right? Idea. So you're good performing, getting the adrenaline. For me, it's a trip. I love that. Doing the behind the scene, the coordinating or the choreographing a fight, for instance, it's more creativity. You know, you create. Mm. So it's two different aspects of it. I love both equally. It just depends the mood. Today, you know, I feel like coordinating. Maybe tomorrow, the feeling like a stunt. but it's it's hard for me to choose. I love both equally, and I hope to continue, you know, doing stunts until I'm 70 years old, you know. Then if I can't, let's say tomorrow I break my arm badly or my foot and I can't walk, or I walk poorly, or I can't do the stunt anymore, it's a good substitute now to be able to be again behind the camera and do the actual choreography and all that. However, I like to show other people how to do things, you know. I'm not the guy who's like, oh yeah, do this. I can't do it, but do this, you know. so I love to be able to show them how to do this, so you know, to be able to be reliable, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think that's important. You know, anytime you're in a physical oriented job, is if you're going to expect people to do it, you better be able to do it yourself, right? I mean, it's in Hollywood and with everything you're doing, it kind of lends to the last question, which is, you know, do you ever see yourself retiring or keep working? You said keep working, and I think you just answered it, because you're giving yourself kind of the backup job, right? There will be a day when we're all old, broken, and can't really do much, and at least you've got the choreography part you can leverage, right?
Yeah, fortunately, nothing bad will happen until, but, you know, if I am retired, I will be forced to. I won't be willing to.
We will be right back after the break. Hey, this is Clint Emerson, retired Navy SEAL. I get a lot of questions about my morning routine. So here it is in a nutshell. 5 a.m., wake up. First cup of coffee, I dump Bubs Naturals MCT oil in there. And then I mix it around with one of those little automatic stir spoon thingies that make it all frothy and creamy. And then my second cup, I dump Bubs Naturals collagen in there. Now, the reason I do both is the first one, MCT, fuels my brain. It gets me up, allows me to focus on whatever I've got going on. The second cup of coffee has collagen, which honestly, it's like lubrication for my joints. It makes my neck and my shoulders, my left hip and my left knee feel pretty damn good. And it wasn't until I went over to Australia that I realized that this stuff really does work. I was overseas for about 45 days, and in the first week, I wasn't so focused in the morning. In fact, I was a little foggy, and my neck was hurting, my shoulders were hurting, and I thought to myself, it's just jet lag, different pillow, a different mattress. And then it dawned on me, I don't have my Bubs with me. The day I got back to the States, I immediately started back up, and within a week of being home, I was focused again, my joints didn't hurt, and I was like, holy, I can tell you that Bubs Naturals works. Great for your skin and hair, by the way. Everything feels good. Unlike a lot of supplements out there, it actually works, and that's the key takeaway here. It works. I'm telling you. You will notice a difference. Check out BubsNaturals.com and order some MCT and collagen now. And don't forget to use promo code CANYOUSURVIVE. BubsNaturals.com, promo code CANYOUSURVIVE. I can't imagine retiring. Like, it's just one of those things. I don't know what I would do. I'd sit around bored out of my mind. I mean, people say, well, you'd be traveling, you'd be doing this, but even then, it's like, even travel, it's not like traveling. Once you get to your destination, yeah, that's fun, but the rest of it sucks. So like when people say, hey, I'm gonna travel, like, no, I don't want to do the travel part. I just want to show up at the destination. All right, so now let's roll into you. All right, so we've learned a lot so far, but to kick it off, first question, most dangerous moment you've ever faced? Could be work, could be military, whatever. Dangerous moment.
Dangerous moment.
Hmm. Yeah, where you're like, holy shit.
I think it was work. I think it's one of the stunt we did with another stuntman was to jump off, tackling each other and jump off and landing head first 65 foot down in water.
Oh, wow.
So
65 feet. I mean, they say water after 50 feet becomes concrete, right?
And the first thing that hit the water actually was my head on this one. But we were resetting and we were looking down and it's like, oh, that's pretty high, 65. I mean, if you jump off straight down and, you know, take a position and all that, yeah, I'd be fine. But tackling and getting messy and then fall head first into that was honestly very, very scary in some ways, you know. I mean, scaring is part of my job, and a lot of people say, oh, I'm not scared. That means they are crazy, you know. It's part of again the survival instincts, you know. So yeah, you learn throughout the years how to deal with that fear, and you kind of you let your mind takes over, you know, that body, you know, fears and shaking. And you know, I mean, obviously your mind is telling not to do it the whole time. All you have to do is relax, trust your training, trust what you've done. And then the process goes faster every time, you know, every time you know that stunt more and more. That's why I said training, the more you train, it's not the less fear you have, but the more, the easier it is to deal with that fear, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
But the fear factor is always somehow there, more or less, but it's especially how you deal with it. So that fall, or 65, it was the first time we did that stunt, you know. And so that's why I had a lot of fear. I've never done that kind of stuff before. I've jumped from a 90-foot bridge to water, but never a 65, which even if it's lower 65 bridge, attached to another person, tackling him and going head first. So the things is when you grow and grab, tackle each other, what you don't want to do as you fall is separate, because if you let go of each other, when you hit the water and you hit and you slam each other again, now you slam it a certain amount of force, you can hit each other, lose consciousness, and you're in the water and then you sink. If you pass out in the water, you go down.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So the idea is to hold on it, no matter what happened. And if we can't, if we're over flipping with that, we don't care. We just hold on to each other until. So that was probably the time where I was asking myself a lot of questions. I don't.
Yeah, a lot of questions. Now, so how many times did you have to do it?
Just one. We did.
Oh, yeah, right. Just one. Now, did either one of you get knocked unconscious if you went head first, or were you okay?
No, I swallowed a lot of water because he got my head and he goes backwards and then I fall back. So now, you know, we started to tilt and now I was, my head was exposed to the water first and I hit the water under his arm and then my knee hit his knee and I didn't feel it. I don't know if it was adrenaline or not, but he felt it. And then the next day he had a little sore in his knee. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, it definitely sounds crazy.
Yeah, it was. Yes.
And I can appreciate it because for the years that, you know, for us in the SEAL teams, you know, we, you know, we're jumping out of helicopters, we're jumping off, you know, jet boats, and, you know, there's safety parameters. We max out the safety parameters to about as far as we can go, just so that the number one rule, everyone stay conscious, right? You don't want to go unconscious, especially when usually that's how you're kicking off an operation, right? So everyone needs to be awake so that they can actually go do the mission. Okay. And so I can appreciate a fall like that, because the rules for helicopter cast and recovery, where if the forward movement of the helicopter, I think it can't be any faster than 20 knots, and then you can't be any higher at 20 knots. You can't be any higher than, I believe it was 10 feet. And then if you are at 10 knots forward speed, then you can go up to 20 feet. So the speed and the height balance each other out. And you know, there's plenty of times when, you know, that's not an exact science. You know, usually a helicopter pilot, you know, their 10 feet usually isn't measured on their instrument panel, right? Or 20 feet.
High, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it usually starts like higher when you talk about altitude. But anyway, but point being is I can totally appreciate, because sometimes we're jumping out and I'm going, what the fuck? And then you land and you're like, okay, that wasn't so bad after all. But we're going feet first, you know, and to that more of that, you know, jumper body position that you're referring to, you know, hands crossed, or if you have your mask on, your mask is, you're holding your face, or whatever the conditions are and the equipment you have. So yeah, that takes balls, buddy. Big balls. Big balls on.
I'm sure you've done some stunts as well in your career.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, they were. We didn't call them stunts, though. We just were like, yeah, we just got to get there.
I know a lot of people, you know, from Special Force or Steel Team that now, you know, are stuntmen, you know, because those skills which are required on movies, you know, like people that looks believable, you know, look believable in the way they move, the way they hold a weapon, you know. So those are great skills to be a stuntman as well. Just have to learn how to fall, which, you know, probably did already, but all of those all of those on camera tricks or techniques, you know.
That's
what you learn.
The most important thing you pointed out is train and rehearse, which we take seriously all the time. We train constantly. And then for, you know, big operations, obviously we're rehearsing it over and over and over again, trying to anticipate where the fail points are. And then you try to prevent those right once you identify them. So yeah, good stuff. And I've got a kind of a random question.
Yeah.
Have you ever worked with Harry Humphries, any of those guys that kind of run a bunch of the stunt coordination for, there's a lot of SEALs that work for Harry Humphries and Kevin Kent. Those guys that work on some of the, maybe some.
No, Keith Woolard. I don't know if you know the name, Keith Woolard. He's an ex SEAL. He's a stunt coordinator, excuse me. He's a stunt coordinator, Keith Woolard, and he's been doing SEALs in the past. So
he did that, yeah. Now you worked on the TV show SEAL Team, right?
I worked on SEAL Team. I even doubled an actor for like the whole third season of it. It's fantastic. Great show, and they hire experienced people with military experience, so it's not just trying to fake it, you know. It's actually everything that you do has been, you know, rehearsed with experts, you know?
Yeah, that's what I've noticed. I don't really watch it, but the little scenes I've seen, you can tell they're really good technical advisors and stunt guys and stuff like that. Yeah, you can tell it's professionally done.
As a matter of fact, you could be the double. You kind of have the same look than the double on the lead on that show. David Borgeras.
I don't know. Do I look like him? I don't know. Yeah. I've got low light in here, so that way I look better. I look better in low light. Let's see here. What do we got? Oh, so going backwards with your martial arts experience, I see here you're kind of a fan of Jeet Kune Do. Did you you got a lot of experience in that, or?
Well, definitely. When I grew up, I started judo 8 years old, and I loved it. I was very proficient on it, so I kept going. I did a martial art called Savat, which is a French boxing, you know, and I did also a Western boxing, just with the punches, and then I did some kickboxing over there as well. Then I moved to Seattle. Then I was 22 years old from France, because I'm originally from France.
Right.
Moved to Seattle, and couldn't speak a word of English. All I could see is 1, 2, 3, and I love you. After a while, you say that, you know, people's gonna start to wonder.
Especially in San Francisco, you know. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know which
anywhere.
Side of the
San Francisco, LA, anywhere people wonder. And this guy's a French lover. He loves everybody. I remember going to Bruce Lee's grave at the Lakeview Cemetery. That's where, you know, you heard of Bruce Lee.
Yeah. Right? Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And it was in Seattle, and I remember that day forever, because I was on the grave, and then this older man came and approached me, and we're starting to talk. And his name is Taki Kimura, And Taki Kimura used to be Bruce Lee's best friend, best man when Bruce Lee got married. He,
yeah.
His assistant when they go and do seminars and all that. I didn't know the guy at the time, so we started to converse as much as I could. It was more like body language for me because my English was bad.
Yeah, yeah.
But he ended up, you know, listening and be fascinated of me being French and coming all the way to visit his friend and all that. And I was wondering, who's this guy? Who's this guy? And he invited me to his school, which was not around Seattle. It was probably 45 minutes away. And I started martial art in his school. He took me in his class. And I did 14 years with him, became instructor or semi-instructor. Or
wow.
Whatever the rank it is on their school. And I was around the Bruce Lee's family, Bruce Lee's friends. It was amazing for me being around that. It was such an honor. And learning Wing Chun, learning Jeet Kune Do as well, which was great for, you know, compliment for what I've learned before. And then after that, I learned, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, kickboxing, Muay Thai, and then MMA. We did some MMA as well. So all those, you know, I was lucky, all those tools that I have and which I apply today for my work, different style, different way of fighting, you know, like, is the movie, what's the style of the actor? Is he a brawler? Is he just punching, greedy? Is he doesn't know how to fight? Is he like a you know, tactical train person, military person, how to fight? Is he a martial artist? You know, all of that, you know, I can match whatever needs it is for the script into that style of fighting.
Yeah, that is super cool. And what a unique way to meet someone, especially, I mean, everybody's heard of, you know, Taki. I mean, that's like him and Danny Insanto, right? Those are the two guys that are still going, still ticking that trained with Bruce Lee. Super cool. Yeah,
and I met all of them before they passed too. Ted Wong, you know, J.C. Glover, all of those guys, you know, I met them. I trained with them and all that in the past because I was involved for 14 years with the whole clan, I say.
Yeah.
Clan. So it's such an honor. I never expected or even dreamed of being around those people.
We will be right back after the break. Let's go even further back, right? You are from France. Everybody should probably know that by now with your accent. And
bonjour.
Yep. And so tell us, you know, you were in the Navy, you're a paratrooper. Kind of give me your military experience.
So I started with a paratrooper as a very young, probably 17. At that time.
And that's in the Navy? Navy paratrooper?
In a paratrooper, yeah. It was the training first. You know, you do a training to see if you pass your classes and all that to be that paratrooper. So I had to have my parents authorizing me because I was underage to be there. And so I had I had to do all the class, my class, and the training, and we went to Corsica to do all the jumps, night jumps, you know, day jump, and it was amazing, a great experience. That's what I wanted to do, and I started to do that. And then they approached me to say, "Oh, your skills and your talent would be more we love your skill there, but you would bring more benefit to us if you moved, because they had a lack of people going to the Navy, which in France is like, it'll be like, how you would say here, earth military, like, you know, like just regular military."
Yeah. So, yeah.
And I was like, and I loved jumping out of the, you know, plane, you know, the chutes, even though the chutes were like umbrellas, they're so small. So you arrive pretty fast. You have to position.
Static line paratrooper. Yeah.
Exactly. A bunch of Mary Poppins coming. it was great. Fantastic experience. I wish I made the decision to stay there and to not go to the Navy, because I was missing that part of the job. Even though in the Navy, I was great doing sports. I was always, you know, again, proficient in anything that it was physical. But I was missing the that life, you know, the plane, the jumping, the And so I asked to be reinstated. Sorry, my French is going.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay.
The word.
Yeah, you're making it. You're making it work.
Yes. I always try to. But yeah, so they refused. It's like, you're doing good there. We need you there. And then after a while, I got bored, or I got tired of it. And I said, you know what? I was still young, you know. So I was like, I quit. So I didn't quit.
So you didn't re-enlist when it was time. Re-enlist was the word you were looking for, I think.
I did the paratrooping, and then the Navy,
right?
You know, change the trainings and all that, and then they asked me to
stay.
To stay there, and I say no. And
right.
I was young, and I wish I could have stayed actually longer. I kind of regret afterwards, but my mind was going 100 miles an hour. I wanted to do this, I wanted to do that, and I wanted to actually go to another country eventually. It was always in my mind to not stay. I didn't feel home in France. I love my friends, I love my family, but as far as the system and all that, I never felt home over there. And that's a personal thing. I'm not blaming for the French people who love France and all that. I gotta say, you know, you go to France and for me, it's like, I love to go back to visit, you know, the history or the architectural design, beautiful buildings that they have, which are like 500, 600 years old, 700 years old, you know, sometimes more. The food is amazing, you know, in France.
Oh, yeah.
Culinary art are very dedicated to their food. So it's amazing. So I love going there to vacation. But I don't feel home anymore. This is my home here in America. I know it because every time I'm there more than 2 weeks, I want to go back. I was like, okay.
Time to go.
Yeah. And my family is Italian, so there's a lot of drama. So after a week of spending with them, I'm not used to that anymore.
So Italian, they're all Italian descendant living in France.
Both of them, actually. My mother and father, Sicilian, actually, both of them.
All right.
So it's funny because we did the 23andMe recently. I did the things, and I have zero French. 96.3% Sicilian.
Wow.
So 96, I was like.
All right. You're straight up gangster. That's cool.
Yeah,
there you go. Do you speak any Italian?
Yeah, I understand it. I speak a little bit, just the basic, not like someone who was born there or has been practicing a little bit of it, I'll say.
Yeah. That's cool, man. Good stuff. That's an interesting background. Now, so where in all that did you decide to be a stuntman?
long story. So, I mean... So when I'll make it short. So when I was in Ataki, Kimura, it's actually is in his school. There were a senior instructor over there named Mike Hilo, great guy, fantastic. And he was a stuntman and a stunt coordinator. So one day he's like, do you want to do, do you want to do stunts? And I'm like, well, what is stunts? It's like, you fall down and you climb things and I'm like, I've been doing this all my life. When I was 3 years old, I was scaring my mother, climbing all those electrical poles and this. You mean like I can get paid and do that? And he's like, so he hired me for a gig for Microsoft. It was in Seattle. It was like an internal industrial video for Microsoft for the employees and all that. And I didn't know what was expected to me, so I'm showing up at the Microsoft offices and building over there. And he's like, he's there and he's telling me, so you got to run into the hallway, you're dressed, with a nice suit, with glasses, being an employee and Microsoft employee. You're running away from the guy and then you make a right turn. And then you, and then the guy who doesn't see you coming, talking to another person, raise his arm. As you pass him by, you get the arm on the face, you do a backflip and you fall on the stomach. I was like, great, fantastic.
What?
I'll do it. And then so he's like, you start here, and then Bill Gates is going to run after you, and then he's going to make a turn. And I'm like, oh, who? He said, Bill Gates. I mean, you know, and I told him, I was like, you mean the fake one, like a double or something? He's like, no, Bill Gates is going to come. And yeah, I was like, he's going to come. He's going to run after hell? Me. I wasn't used to all that stuff. And I was like, oh my God, I was baffled. I wasn't believing him until I see Bill Gates walking in like this. And you know, he was the guy running after me because it was a video about, you know, him being strong, tough. And it's kind of funny because he's a skinny dude and very geeky. Yeah, yeah. So he's like grabbing the guy, slamming them on the desk because they don't do their work, spying on them. You know, and then my thing was, he was running after me, he was angry at me or something. And so, so yeah, I loved it. And I was like, oh, sign me in for the next one, you know? And then little by little, I started to do more and more. I started to do also background work in Seattle. I mean, anything you do in Seattle, it's not a lot of work, you know, there's not a lot of movie stuff going on over there. So it was more like a hobby for me. Because at that point, I started to have my own construction company, doing tiling, doing art, doing interior designing, doing full finishing murals. Because I have a background of art as well. I used to paint on canvas when I was younger. And so I combined the whole thing and I had my own construction. So all this stuff on the side, I was doing stunts and all that. It was more like, you know, twice a year, maybe, or once a year. It wasn't really.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that, but it got me the flavor of doing more and more and more, to a point where in 2014, I got to coordinate. I had a chance to actually fight, choreograph one of the longest fight scene ever recorded in the movie history, in a movie called Beta Test. It was a low budget, like $2 million, maybe movie. But in that scene, there were a 6-minute and 6-second scene where people actually, there's no cuts and people going through glasses, through windows, to punches and all that. So it was a long scene. I mean, 1 minute fight is long.
Time.
6 minutes is even longer. We had like 2.5 weeks of rehearsal just to prepare for it. And what you didn't want to do is be the guy that's going to miss that punch, is going to have to redo the whole ring. And people going through glasses and all that, they're all going to be happy because of that guy that missed that punch or whatever it is. So it's funny because so we rehearse and all that. And I actually had a part in that movie where I'm walking in and fighting with the actor, the main actor, which was Manu Bennett. I don't know if you know Manu Bennett from... New Zealand. He was, you know, he was in Arrow. You know, he did the guy. What's his name? Stroke. What's his name with that? Yeah, with that band. Forgot. Deathstroke. Yeah, he was playing.
Oh, Deathstroke. Yeah.
And he did also Spartacus, the TV show Spartacus, back there. For I think it was showing in Stars at the time, but he was playing Crixus, the undefeated goal. So that's the actor. So really stocky in me. So I was fighting him, but it's funny because it's a one take. So we're all making sure everybody's getting to the point where the camera catching all of the action and making it look like a real punch coming and all that. So, and as I'm walking to the scene, you know, because it's a one take, you got to play the whole thing the whole time. There is no cuts. I'm seeing all the glass on the floor from all the other person going, you know, through the glass and all that. And I'm fighting him one-on-one, right? And we never rehearsed with the glass on the floor. So, and I'm doing all those crazy kicks. And I'm like, oh, you're going to see, it's me. I'm going to mess up the whole thing. I created the action, but I'm going to be the one flipping on those glasses and falling down. We're going to have to redo the whole thing. So we had to be really careful as we fought, obviously, to not slip. And if we do, we'll try to play it like it was part of it, you know. But
right.
Anyway, after that film, people love my work and say, oh, you should move to LA, you know, over there. You would be able to work all the time and all that. And I came here, and it took a couple of years for me to, I mean, the first year I worked maybe a couple of days a day, but it's all about socializing with people, start to learn who does what, where to train, you know, who to meet, you know, and meet the coordinators, you know, whether they are on set or you try to contact them through emails and say, hey, my name is Daniel. You know, I'm a stuntman. I have those skills. You know, I'd love to work for you. You know, hope to work for you. And you send him a picture and then your measurements and a reel, a stunt reel of what you have. So a stunt reel is all the captured video of all your falls and stuff and that. So that's how you sell yourself through too. And so little by little, I start to work more and more and more. It's like a snowball effect, you know. More you work, the more people are confident to hire you because, you know, they know you can do the job and all that. So
you show up on time.
And that's very you know, you got to be good to work with, you know. You got to know your spot. You can't be there loud and talking and all that, talking to actors, talking. You got to know your spot. You got to know when to speak, when to be there helping. You know, always have an eye on the stunt coordinator, making sure he doesn't need any help. If he does, if he needs to carry the mat, you're there with him. You know, I mean, he's the guy who hired you. So you want to be aware of all that. You make sure everybody's safe. If you see something that is not, that you don't think it's safe, to say something or do something about it, you know? So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff, man. You're like I said before, you got a wealth of knowledge in this industry, and it's cool to hear about it.
I'm lucky to have great teachers. That's all it is. You know?
And you're you've been in a lot of dangerous situations, but it's that time to put you in a hypothetical dangerous situation and see how your mind works.
No, I'm not. I can't feel like I'm gonna get hit by a car right now.
Yeah, here's the stress. Here we go.
You're listening to Can You Survive This Podcast? Thanks for tuning in. Please make sure to subscribe, rate, and share on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
All right. So you are out on the town working on stunts for a movie, okay? After a long Friday, today, working on set, you stop for a quick bite at a bar on your way back to your hotel room, okay? Now, after hanging at the bar and having a little dinner, you decide to walk back to your hotel. On your way back to the hotel, you pass through a dimly lit parking lot, okay? Suddenly, a 15-passenger van screeches up to a halt in front of you. Three men hop out, one with a gun pointed right at you. They say, "What hotel are the movie stars staying at?" So do you A, assume a nonviolent posture, hands
so
in the air.
Am I still in the car or outside?
You're outside still. You got the gun pointed at you. They ask you, "Where are the movie stars staying?" Okay. So do you A, assume a nonviolent posture, hands in the air, and try to de-escalate the situation with body language, or B, run and take cover behind the engine block of a vehicle that's nearby?
So either one, eh? Whether I comply
which
on
one?
That.
Which one? Yeah, which one's the right answer? That's the question.
Only those two. I mean, there's more answers that I would have picked out of those, but... You know, if there's just one guy with a gun, I'll know. I love adrenaline, so
It's three guns,
right? So no way. I'd probably if I'm up and next to them, I'll probably comply. You mean like where's the with the stars and all that?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You're saying, hey, I don't want any trouble. Hands are up, patting the air.
I tell you, if it's something more important, if it's like, where is that person? So we're going to, obviously they want to shoot the star, right? So they have a gun, they want to go, they want to find out. So it's about life saving, right? So, So if I was in a car and this happened, I'll probably back up in zigzag. if I'm outside, and I'll probably would say, according to my surrounding, if it's high bushes and all that, I say I might have a chance. If it's flat, I might have less chance. But I'm I'm all up for adrenaline, and I say, you know what, if I gotta die, I gotta die. I would probably jump out and behind my car and then start to run like crazy, zigzag.
Okay, so that's your final answer? Zigzag. All right, well, in this particular game, that is not the correct answer.
Of course.
But, and here's the reason. Yeah. So assuming a nonviolent posture, right? This is big in combatives because your nonviolent posture looks innocent, but it's actually, it's a Trojan horse, right? I can still strike you. I can still do whatever I want from right here. But at the same time, you're calming the situation down. You're trying to de-escalate it. Turning your back. Now, you're kind of a rare guy, right? You could zigzag, run. You said the right words. A lot of people would, if they turn their back and just run, they wouldn't think about zigzagging, and then they'd take a couple of bullets in the back, right? So, A, for those that are inexperienced, is, hey, try to just get everything calm so that you get a conversation going with these guys. De-escalate it the best you can. Because if they're point blank and they got guns pointed at you and you turn around and try to run, there's nothing that says they just won't shoot you in the back. All right. Okay.
There's nothing to say they're going to shoot you anyway, whether you say something.
That's right. That is true.
Dead and you would have given their awful information as well.
That is true. These questions, sometimes the answers are both correct, but that's part of the fun of the game. But the other key to this is you talking through it. What you just did, I mean, that's gold, right? You just talk through the answers, and that's the gold we're looking for. Okay. Your hands are up. You tell them, you tell them that you're just a stunt guy. I mean, you don't know where these actors are staying, right? So frustrated, they corral you at gunpoint into the back of the van, all right? So now you sit in the back. A few rows are empty in front of you. Okay, so now you're in the van. There's a few rows between you and the bad guys. Okay, there's one guy driving and one sitting in the passenger seat. Okay, the third guy is two rows in front of you. Okay, and his gun, and he's the one with the gun.
Oh, so there's one gun.
And the one gun is kind of right there. Closest to you, yes. So you're thinking of a way to get out at this point, right? The driver is swerving and not paying attention, okay? As the vehicle rounds a corner, you realize he's going to crash, right? This guy's driving recklessly. He's probably nervous. It's probably the first time that they've taken someone hostage. So he's driving crazy. And you see a turn coming. He's probably not going to make the turn, right? This van has a potential of rolling. Who knows, right? So do you, A, lay on the floor of the vehicle and brace for impact? You're a stunt guy, so you... Or B, brace for impact by placing your head against the seat in front of you, right? And keeping your legs at a 90-degree angle and your hands overhead. So you're putting all your pressure against the back of the seat in front of you to kind of lock yourself into place and prepare for impact. And then the van crashes, right? So which one is the proper? A, lay on the floor, or B, brace yourself using the seat?
And if you start to roll, put your hand on the ceiling so you won't hit the ceiling going back. So you're pushing against the ceiling. So now when you fall, it will be like a handstand. You know, you add pressure on the ceiling. And so when you turn, you will be locked. You know, you don't want to, because if you have this and this, what happened is if the van start to roll also, you know, is you're gonna go back up to the ceiling and down.
I like it.
So brace for impact, exactly the same position you did. And if you feel like it's going to turn, start to... pushed against the ceiling.
Hands against the ceiling. I like it. That's awesome. That's a great tip. Okay, so the van crashes. By bracing yourself, you're in better shape, you're less disoriented, and you're not injured, okay? And the two in the front seats are still in the front seat, but the third guy with the gun is missing, you know? It's like, where the hell did he go? The gun, you know? So do you, A, hop out of the back of the van... Look for a discreet place to hide and assess the situation, right? Just get yourself some safe space and then kind of watch. Or just get up and run, you know. Or wait a minute. Sorry, I'm reading this wrong. Get up to the front of the van and try to commandeer the vehicle, right?
Yes.
You know, commandeer, steal it, right? So are you gonna basically go out the back, create some distance between you and the accident, and watch and make sure what these bad guys are going to do, or B, just run up to the front and try and get into the driver's seat?
The guy with the gun is not in the van. He's probably outside with the gun. So I'm safer in the van. To me, I can even steal that vehicle with them passed out next to me. It doesn't matter. I'll probably take the vehicle, going miles away, and then run off. Instead of, you know, running off right now and having the guy shooting me. Yeah. Because if I have no visual on the guy with the gun, but if I know for sure he's not in the vehicle, I'll try to run to steal a vehicle, run a few miles away, as long as those guys are passed out. I can always throw them out of the van. But then I'll probably exit.
So does it cross your mind that the vehicle is crashed and it may not even run?
Oh, if it's not running, then I'll probably stay in the van until I have a visual of the guy. Or if I don't, I'll just escape, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's you just kind of went through the all of the options, and that's a good job. It's not likely the van will function after this crash. Okay. And you will have to overpower the two guys up there in order to get control. So it's one versus two over a van that doesn't work. So, you know, that obviously doesn't make sense. And you talked yourself right into the right answer.
I mean, if they have no gun, you know, my background, two guys is possible.
Yes. It's like we say, you know, it's a fair fight for one Navy SEAL when there's three bad guys, not just one. We need three in order for it to be a fair fight, right? So you exit through the back and you look for an escape route. Okay, the driver gets out. He's disoriented and he's approaching you. All right, he's like kind of, you can tell the guy's like borderline knocked out. So do you A, just go ahead and run towards the escape route, or B, let him approach and put your hands in the air, nonviolent posture, step into the gap and go ahead and knock him out with an elbow strike.
That's tempting.
there you go.
Again, you know, it's all about visual, what you have around, what's going on, you know,
you like adrenaline.
I would probably elbow the guy, honestly. Yeah.
That's right. Stick around, knock them out, because you know what the best part of this is? When you don't know where someone is, and you already brought this up, you could run straight into the guy that you don't know where he's at. If you stay, and now this is for trained folks, you're going ahead and taking care of business with what you have in sight, right? So you knock this guy out. Okay, I know where he's at. I'm not sure about the other guy. We may find out about that. But I know that there's a third guy, and he's somewhere around me, and that's the problem. That is really the unknown that you have to kind of figure out in a methodical way. Yeah. Okay, so by stepping in and going ahead and connecting that elbow properly, you're bouncing the brain around, which is the coup counter coup action, and that's what leads to a knockout. And you drop him in one hit because you are an experienced guy. So now, do you A, take off running, or B, pull the second guy out of the passenger seat and knock him out too?
I'm running. you never know what's the situation. Yeah. He might have another gun. Once you know you say the idea of this is to, you know, get out and get everybody that comes in your way, you know, or that potentially could arm you, you know, if they are aware they're alive, or if they are in a perimeter very close to you, is to protect yourself. And, you know, and if that person is there, you know, if you can knock him out, but keep going.
So that's right.
What would you want to go back in? You know, that's the pride after that. That's the pride. Oh, what happened there? Nobody fights with me. Yes. Where is he?
Yeah. No doubt. We preach all the time on here that, hey, your job is number one, awareness, right? stay conscious, stay alive, keep your wits about you, stay aware, and then take care of the problems as they confront you. No doubt about it. But your goal is always to create pain and then create space, you know, because you want to get away. This one, you could go either way because it's you, right? You are a trained guy. Obviously, with the stunt world, you know how to take a hit. And also with your fighting experience, you know how to deliver some good consequences, right? So, you know, so that it could go either way. If you would have answered either one, it would have been right. So anyway, let's say, you know, the third guy shows up, right? Shows up out of the blue, and now he's got you at gunpoint. He's keeping his distance, though, because he knows now that you've got some skills, right? And he doesn't want you taking his gun away with some ninja move. So one of the two you knocked out now comes over and is going to duct tape your hands behind your back, okay? And then he tapes your feet together at the ankle, okay? And since you don't know where any of the actors are staying, the bad guys have no use for you now, okay? So they decide they got to get rid of you. So now, okay, have you ever been wrapped up in duct tape?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I figure you do. And then do you know how to get
pretty
out of
strong.
It?
You see, obviously.
I'm asking before I ask you the questions. So.
Something sharp? You know, I mean, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. So they take you, they're going to take you, right? You're still duct tape, and now you're out on a boat. It's rough waters, and they're going to disappear you. Okay, kind of like what the Clintons do to people all the time. They're going to disappear you, or they're going to suicide you, one or the other. All right, so do you, A, attempt to defeat the duct tape, right, so that you can get away, or B, get up, shoulder check one of the guys, like just hit him off and try to hit him off the boat. So get out of the duct tape, or while you've got duct tape on you, try to shoulder check one of these guys
in
this boat. Oh, yeah. Yep.
I'm going to die anyway, so might as well. Also, I'll show a shaggy guy. I'd say salty water, maybe help with the, you know, adhesive, adhesion of the, you know, duct tape or not. Probably shoulder. I have nothing to lose at this point. I'm taking my foot, my arms, you know. If I can convince to not kill me, because I can't do it anymore, you know, if I can get up and do one more move, I'll probably ram into them. And then hopefully, you know, one will go in the water, I'll go in the water, a boat will see it, I'll come to rescue, or, you know, and I'll probably sink all the way down. But to me, I don't see, honestly, I don't see, you know, and you probably see that, but I don't see any other, you know, there's no more discussion, obviously, they're killing me. So I'll probably do that. I'll take one with me if I can.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I think you would be better off trying to get free of the duct tape so that you can leverage using your hands and your legs, which we know you're good at using. Try to get out of the duct tape.
And there's a lot of from back and forth, what it is, you know, create some kind of flexibility or some loose, you know, by doing this, you know, those ones. Keep doing it. I don't know if it works. I know it works in some area. But.
Well, there is a trick. There is a trick to getting out, and I've covered it before. It's if your hands are bound at the wrists, okay, then you're going to put your hands out in front of you with your thumbs at eye level, and then you're going to rocket your elbows past your rib cage as fast as you can. And so what happens is your body becomes a wedge, and the physics will literally cut that duct tape. It'll look like it's been cut with scissors. And it doesn't matter if it's 5 wraps of duct tape or 50 wraps of duct tape. The trick works every single time. You just got to rocket your elbows past your rib cage. Don't think about your hands. Your hands just become this thing out there in front of you. And then you're just concentrating on your elbows going past your rib cage, which then creates a and that leverage between the two and your body, your two wrists and your body, it will cut the tape like as if you had scissors with you. It's amazing. And it's fantastic. A cool trick.
You just saved my life.
There you go. So you happen to do this, right? But before you can drive downward and destroy the tape around your ankles, okay, because there's a trick to getting out of your ankle. So you get your hands free, and the way that you want to get out when your ankles are taped is you basically stand upright on your feet, you put your feet at a 45-degree angle, and then you squat to the ground as quickly as possible, and then that will shear the tape around your ankles, okay? But before you can do that, you're knocked into the rough waters. Right. They know, okay, he's trying to escape. We got to get rid of this dude. And they knock you into the water. Okay. So do you thrash around in the water until the duct tape comes free, or just hold your breath and go down? Either hold your breath and then do some deep breathing drills in order to maintain buoyancy. Basically, really, is it A, thrash around and try to get the rest of the duct tape off, or B, use your lungs as buoyancy devices? You're a Navy guy, so I know the
Number two. I've done a lot of diving. So
yeah,
when you, the more you're agitated, the more you're using up oxygen. You know, you're in motion,
right,
or you're scared, or you're in a panic mode, right? You can now suddenly don't hold your breath as much as you could normally because you got the adrenaline, you got the fear, you got all that going. So you're right. The only thing that you can do is stay calm. Can't say take a big deep breath, but I mean, if you know you're going to go to water, the idea is to take a big deep breath before you hit the water, and then you relax your body. And then, you know, by doing this and keeping the air, you'll be able to flow into some point on your back and then breathe.
That's right. Yeah, you nailed it. It's all about maintaining your composure, remain calm, and then remember that those two lungs are great balloons and buoyancy devices, and a lot of people forget this. So if you went into water with both hands still taped, your feet are taped, you can basically push your head back, which forces your chest up, and then get that up out of the water. You take your deep breath, and that's a moment to kind of rest, and then you let the air out slowly, and then take another quick big breath, let the air out slowly, take another big quick breath, and what that does is it keeps your mouth, keeps your head and your chest above water. So you're just kind of holding on to that air to keep your buoyancy, and then you're letting it out slow, and when you feel yourself start to sink, go ahead and take another big deep breath. The other key to this that most people don't know is salt water versus fresh water. So if you're in salt water, you're going to be way buoyant. You're going to float like crazy. But if you're in fresh water, it's not as buoyant, and you're going to sink a lot easier. So you have to keep that in mind as it relates to your breathing and keeping that air in your lungs. Know that if you're thrown into a lake, you're going to let that air out slowly, but you're going to start sinking a lot faster than if you were in salt water. So great answer, though, man. Great answer. You're hitting it right on. So moving on. When it comes to self-preservation in the water, the key to survival is controlling your breathing. We covered that. While using your breathing control and staying calm and becoming a human, becoming buoyant, next step is getting to land, right? So do you A, use the back legs and feet to power kick to land, or while using a back kicking motion to swim, rotate your body back to, basically you're either going to rotate your body or stay on your back as you kick to shore? Which one?
You want to stay on your back, obviously, because if you rotate, then you can't take air anymore, and then you sink.
You're using more energy. Ideally, we call it turtle backing, but this would be more like a dolphin kick. Yeah, you stay on your back, and then you're just going to dolphin kick. And if you need to take a break, you can rotate over and then rotate back. There's a lot of different techniques out there. There really is no right or wrong. as long as you know what you're doing. You got to control
also,
your body.
It's like, is your hand attached in front, in back? Is a bunch of that's yep. that's a you know, those will be also the details. So it's like, do I have this? So now you know, if I have my hands behind, I would probably wouldn't take any risk to twist down and then to push it with my feet, because now if I can't twist back and get some air and start to panic, I'm going now. Right?
That's right. And as we roll into summer and swimming pools and the beaches become popular, I'd say at a swimming pool, you can practice this. You don't have to tie your ankles. You can just cross your feet, and you don't have to tie your wrists, obviously. You can just cross them in front of you or behind you and actually practice this stuff. And I think people will be surprised. That worst case scenario is fresh water, so that's a swimming pool for the most part. And you're going to take nice, big, deep breaths and practice getting to the side as if your hands are tied. And in buds, we do this, right? In SEAL training, they actually tie our hands, they tie our feet, and they, you know, and then you have to basically survive in a very large swimming pool. It's about 20 feet deep, and you just got to remain calm. And you got to basically, there's a bobbing motion you can do, but we're not even going to get into that because it's hard to describe. But anyway, the goal is keeping calm, using your lungs as balloons, and then, of course, find land and start heading towards it the way that you, the best you can. Okay. So, last question. All right. You have reached land. So, what do you, A, you managed to get there. And so, A, do you rest for a moment on shore and compose yourself and then call the cops or find help or destroy the duct tape restraints that you still have and then go find those motherfuckers.
Well, now I know so how to get out of duct tapes, you know. I'll destroy and just swing back to their boat. No. No, I'll find
that's right,
out.
That's right.
Know, obviously. You go and you want to call them, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably the best bet. I think you're going to be a little worn out at this point. So, yeah, take a rest. You know, take a break. Find help. Call the cops. Yeah. And let's just go home and let's go find our hotel and go back
and
to
the
sleep.
The people that actually are paid for that take care of this.
That's right. Yeah. There you go. Let them handle. Hey, good job. You,
thank you,
Daniel, have survived. You have survived this podcast. So good job, and I appreciate all of your very educated answers, your background. So if people want to learn more about you, what are all where can they find out more
about you? On social
media,
you got Facebook, you got Instagram. My Instagram is Daniello Cicero. It's just one L in the middle. So Daniello Cicero, Daniello Cicero. Yeah, that's my Instagram. And it's also my website. If you do it, www.DanieloCicero, again with one L, .com. This is my website, and you can see what I do.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show. We'll have all your contact information in our posts.
Oh, you can also go to Facebook and just type DanieloCicero. I have a page there to see some of the video we do and all that as well.
That's awesome. Well, it was a great conversation. Loved hanging out with you. I appreciate you. Appreciate you taking the time, and thanks
for
coming on the show,
me.
Buddy. Yes, and like I always say, keep it simple because crisis will complicate the rest, and stay safe out there. Thanks, buddy.
Can You Survive This Podcast is a production of Calvary Audio and iHeartMedia. Recorded live from a secure location here in Dallas, Texas. Produced by Brandon Morgan, Jeff Apple, and Clint Emerson. Executive produced by Keegan Rosenberger and Dana Brunetti. For Calvary Audio, I'm Clint Emerson.